Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. And welcome to episode 184 of the English with Kirsty podcast. Often when we think about communication, we think about talking to others, but there are also times when we talk to ourselves with the stories that we tell ourselves and the stories that we tell others in the way that we speak and that we, when we think that, oh, this has always been like this, or I can't do this, or, you know, certain things we tell ourselves stories, but they may not necessarily be true. And that's what we're going to be talking about today in English with Kirsty. I've got an interview with Rachel, who's a psychotherapist, and she has some things to share about stories and how they can be really powerful, but how we need to use them well. Otherwise, we can end up telling ourselves and others things that aren't true. So I hope you enjoy the interview and have a good week. Hi, Rachel. It's really good to have you here on the podcast today.
Hi, it's good to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, maybe you could start by just telling us something about yourself, who you are, what you do, that kind of thing.
So my name's Rachel Surtees. I am a psychotherapist, amongst other things, and my business is called The Rambling Psychotherapist. See people one-to-one for psychotherapy sessions, either online with people throughout the UK, or I also offer what I'm calling a walk and talk service in Leeds, in the north of England, where I'm based.
That's where the rambling comes into it. It's not that you ramble on and talk a lot, it's getting some physical exercise outside.
Yes, it sort of. The name The Rambling Psychotherapist comes, it's meant to be a little bit funny as well, poking fun at psychotherapy a little bit. We've got a reputation for being a bit navel-gazing and verbose with our wordage. So I wanted to poke fun at psychotherapy a little bit as well and just let people know that I don't take myself too seriously.
I think that's nice as well, isn't it? Because if you don't, then you know, maybe they won't as well. And that's a good way to get people to open up a bit.
Yeah. I was hoping it would make me a little more approachable, or make me appear approachable, or put across my approachability, possibly even.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting. One of the things that I found interesting when I started talking to you before was we started talking about stories. And a lot of the time we want to give people information, we want to communicate a message, but you were talking about why you thought stories were really important for making that connection with people and communicating an idea, or, you know, something you wanted to show them. Why are stories important to you? Why do you think that?
Why do I think that? So what people don't realise is that stories are what help us make sense of the world. I think people think about stories as being fictional tales. So the things that we would read in a book, and that a story is not a truth. And yet we make stories up all the time about the things that happen to us in the world, about our experiences, about the places that we live, the people that we live amongst. So for example, at the moment we're living in the story of pandemic Britain, where we are in this part of the world, we're living in the story of pandemic Britain. That means certain things to certain people. And what you'll find is that there are variations on that story in different areas, dependent on the amount of restrictions that are in place, dependent on the facilities that are available to people, dependent on all sorts of different factors, really. The stories that we tell about pandemic Britain vary from place to place, from person to person, family to family, community to community. So what we're thinking of as it's just our truth when we're communicating is in actual fact our version of the truth, our story that we're communicating to people. And because it's a story, there are other options out there about what the truth might be. So although you might subscribe to it as being the truth, or I might subscribe to it as being the truth, other people might not do. They might have a different version of what that story is. And I guess it's, these stories are often unconscious to us as well. So I started off by saying that most people think of stories as being a fictional tale, something that we would read in storybooks, something that isn't true. And ultimately, that's what it is for us as well. It's just our way of making sense in the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think it can be quite powerful. Like, a lot of people are listening to this podcast because they want to communicate better at work, whether that's working in a larger company or working for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think if you really know your audience or the people that are going to be listening to you, it's a good way to find common ground as well. If you share something or if you can relate to them, you've got something of a common story then, because it's like a shared experience. Or if you're trying to
Absolutely.
Talk about something, and like sometimes with my language learners, I am a teacher, but I know what it's like to be learning a language, and I know how hard it is sometimes to be in a meeting or something where you have to use that other language. So I can kind of relate to their story in that, because I've lived it as well.
Absolutely. And if you look at the history of how we use stories as human beings, it goes back way, 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 way back into ancient history, really. Look at our creation stories and how we subscribe to those, including things like the Big Bang theory, etc., etc. So looking at science is just somebody's story of how this part of the world makes sense, and we take that as an absolute truth, or a lot of people take that as an absolute truth, when in actual fact, again, it's just a story that makes the most sense at the time. So stories are really powerful, and like you say, can unite people and divide them as well. So when it comes to communication, it's really important to understand the power of a story, and to understand which story you're telling or listening to or buying into as well, subscribing to.
What about the stories we tell ourselves? Are there sometimes stories, if we're thinking about, with communicating with colleagues and being at work, and you have to get on with people and work together with them, what are the stories that we can tell ourselves that maybe aren't so helpful, and that we need to challenge in our own minds or own lives?
I think so. I've been self-employed for 14 years, so I have to think back to that kind of like working in an organization type arena. And I think one of the most powerful stories that I've seen for myself and heard clients talking about is the busyness story. So we have to be seen to be busy in order to be deemed being effective and efficient. So we have to be and productive even, actually. So that's a story that a lot of people tell themselves, that actually, if I'm not seen to be being busy, people will think I'm not doing my job.
That's not just in the time that you're being employed to be at work, though, isn't it? It's like weekends. People say, oh, how was your weekend? Oh, really busy. I did this and I did. And if somebody said, oh, I just had a really nice leisurely self-care weekend and it was really good. Like, I think now that's becoming more acceptable because we do realize the importance of it. But even in our free time previously, certainly before a lot of the restrictions that we have now, it was, oh, that wasn't a very exciting weekend if you couldn't say all the amazing things that you've been doing in your time.
Well, exactly. And if you think about the way that the question's phrased in the first place, what did you do at the weekend? Not how was your weekend, what did you do at the weekend? So people are already subscribing to that story, aren't they? That actually you have to have done something in order for your weekend to have been worthwhile. For your weekend to have been valid.
Yeah, and it's the same with holidays, because often we don't always go away. So even like now we can't, but before, yes. Like sometimes we would just have a couple of weeks in our home area. We would do things, but we wouldn't necessarily go away every time. And yet, whenever I said, "Oh, I'm on holiday next week," or "I have next week off," it's, "Oh, where are you going?"
Yes. I'm not. Where are you going? What are you going to do? Yeah. How productive are you going to be in your holiday?
So, your time to recover and your time off.
Yeah, it's a really interesting story. And I mean, I've had experience of this myself, years and years and years ago, when I was in my early 20s, I was working in a call centre for a large law firm. And one of the stories they were telling me was, in order to be viewed to be doing my job properly, was that I had to spend no longer than 2 minutes on any one call with a customer that would call in. And yet, a lot of the time, the customers were calling because they had a problem that needed solving. It was going to take a few minutes more to actually solve that. And therefore, you know, for me, the most sense would be to deal with that person's query efficiently and effectively, so that then they don't feel that they haven't had their question answered or they haven't had their problem solved. And then they don't call back later. And what was actually happening, so the company was saying, in order to be efficient, in order to be doing your job properly, you have to spend no more than 2 minutes on any one call. You need to answer at least this many calls in an hour. And what they were finding was that people were calling back and wanting to be put through to the complaints department, and that overall they were losing business as a result of it.
Yeah, because if they're not kind of tracked as the same query, or even if they are, but then they go on to complain, it's like, if you add up all those 2 minutes, you'd get a higher number.
I think we the intended consequence of this only spend 2 minutes on a call was we can deal with more business by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The unintended result, the unintended impact was that actually they were losing business as a result of it. So,
yeah, because a lot of the time we don't feel particularly positive about having to call a call centre a lot of the time, because there's a problem. We've probably had to wait in a queue with some really annoying music, and then you finally get someone. And if you feel that they're trying to rush you and not really taking your problem seriously, then that's just going to make you more dissatisfied and more likely to go somewhere else next time.
Actually, and change the way that you communicate as well with that person who is on the other end of the phone. You know, your story of them then changes. This person doesn't want to help me, and therefore I'm going to be angry with them, or I'm going to be frustrated with them, and I'm going to take my business elsewhere in future. Whereas in fact, from my perspective, sitting there on the other end of the phone, I really wanted to help. I just knew I only had 2 minutes to do it in. So again, there's a cross communication going on there because of this story that actually, in order to do your job efficiently and effectively, you've got this 2 minute window to answer a call in.
Yeah, it's definitely worth thinking about. And I think that kind of moves on. So you've got something with customers and individuals, but there's also the last one of the other podcasts we've had recently was about, you know, is it a difficult colleague, or is there just some kind of miscommunication going on? You know, people mm-hmm. say, oh, this person's really difficult, and sometimes they are, but sometimes it's just communication styles clashing. What kind of things have you seen evidence of that, you know, in the workplace? What can we do to try and avoid some of those things happening?
I think understanding that actually your experience is not necessarily somebody else's. So we make an awful lot of assumptions about people, and we project our experience onto them. I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head, and I'm now struggling a little bit, I'm afraid. But if we take the kind of the example of the busyness again, being seen to be busy, people will assume that people are doing work and that they're being efficient and effective. And in actual fact, if you're coming up to a deadline where somebody's being running around, being busy, looking like they're doing an awful lot of work, and they're coming closer to the deadline, and they go, actually, I'm not going to make that deadline. Somebody goes, well, how come? You know? How come? I don't understand, because what I've seen, what you've been communicating to me, is that you're really busy, you're working on this, you're going to get there, it's going to happen. And actually, now you're telling me that that's not the case. So what have you been working on? And then the story is kind of exposed a little bit, isn't it, as being a story, I guess. Then they have to come in and say what has actually been happening is this, whereas an assumption has been made. It's quite a poor example that I've chosen there. But we make assumptions that what we're seeing is the truth. What we're hearing is a certain truth. And we also take our experience as people and put that onto the things that we're seeing and hearing as well, and translate it as well.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, thinking not so much about deadlines, but I remember a conversation I had with somebody about home working before everybody was working at home. And I wanted to get permission for some home working. And I remember a senior member of staff saying, well, yes, but I know what you're doing. I know that you're working when I can see you at your desk, but I don't know what you're doing at home. And I mean, I was was working conscientiously, but I found it really, really hard in the open plan office because there was a lot of people in there. It was very noisy. There were constant interruptions. And I was saying, yeah, you do know that I'm working, but if I were working at home, I wouldn't have all of this craziness going on around me. It would be so much easier for me to work and I would be more productive.
Absolutely.
But you don't know that because you haven't seen that. You just have this idea that being in the office means working hard and being at home means watching Netflix all day.
Yes.
But that doesn't necessarily represent the truth because you don't know how I work at home.
Exactly. And how is that then communicated? How is that story then communicated? So these unconscious stories kind of meet each other and miss each other as well. So you end up kind of one person is thinking, well, if I can't see that person working, I don't know they're working and therefore they're not. You know, that's one story. And then you're at home working away. And I guess assuming you're being trusted to do that as well. And when it comes into it, when it comes into actual communication, you start to dialogue about that, the two different stories become exposed.
Yeah, and I think some of the stories we tell ourselves might be based on like previous experience of a certain, maybe like somebody from a certain team, and you always have problems with this team because they never give you the information like in the way that you need it. And I remember in one of my roles, I went to spend a morning with another team just because, I mean, it was supposed to be like an induction, like to help me get to know people. But when I came back, I did realize some of the pressures that they were under that we didn't know anything about. And like, we might think they were slow, but to be fair, they were just really busy with other stuff that didn't affect us.
Yes.
So it helped me, like the story we were telling each other about this other team's like, oh, they're a load of lazy so-and-so. Yes. But the truth is, they were incredibly busy. We just didn't know about it because it wasn't our problem.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess that's a way of miscommunicating as well. But then when you come into direct dialogue, we can miscommunicate because of our stories even in those moments. So for me as a psychotherapist, I'm really careful these days, particularly when somebody tells me about their experience, that I really inquire into their experience and what their experience is for them, especially if I've had similar experiences, because I'm in danger of assuming that their experience is the same as mine. And usually that's not the case.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important, isn't it? Because if we can think, oh, you know, I don't know, I don't have children, but for those who do homeschooling, like one person's homeschooling experience is going to be completely different to someone else's, even if everyone on the same street is doing it. It's not going to be the same in every house.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, taking that homeschooling as an example, I've got a 16-year-old daughter at home at the moment who's doing her GCSEs this year. And I'm really aware that I've got friends who've got similar age children. They're really having to get in there and really having to do an awful lot of homeschooling. Whereas for me, homeschooling requires me to get her up on a morning and place her in front of the laptop, and then she just gets on with it. So my experience of homeschooling is really rather stress-free, whereas people, it's a real ordeal. And I could be walking through the world going, well, I don't understand this homeschooling. It's quite easy. You just place them in front of a laptop and off they go, you know? Whereas for other people, that's far from the case.
I think as well, if you're in any kind of field where you're training people, like I can really relate to people who are learning English who find speaking difficult, because when I learn other languages, that's my biggest problem. Listening's okay, reading, writing's okay, speaking, I'd rather write 50 emails than make 5 phone calls. But then I also have customers who don't like listening or who find listening really hard. And, you know, as a teacher, I need to be aware of that because that's not my experience, but it's no less valid for them because it's the thing that they're struggling with.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? Because my partner is Welsh. I'm sort of learning to speak Welsh in the background and I absolutely refuse to speak it out loud. Just because I'm going, I can't make my mouth make those shapes and those sounds and I can't. I'm just getting used to the listening side of things because I can pair it up now with the written word. I can hear it and see it written at the same time and I can make them meet. But the speaking element of it at the moment is evading me.
That's okay. Give it time, it will come. You know, the more confident you feel with the vocabulary and the listening, then
speaking
can come afterwards. Yes. But at the same time, if you let it lag too far behind, it'll always be like the one lagging behind if you don't try to.
Yeah, and I guess it's a story that I'm telling myself, isn't it? That actually, again, kind of bringing it back to stories, the story that I'm telling myself is that I'll look ridiculous if I get it wrong.
Yeah.
And that's something to be embarrassed about. And that when in actual fact, I'm fairly certain. After laughing his back off, my partner would just appreciate the fact that I'm trying.
You're interested enough to care about it, to try, to learn something.
Exactly.
It's very different from like, oh, that's funny, that is, because she got it wrong, rather than, oh, that's, she's spending all this effort on learning this thing, like for you as well, but for, to show interest in his heritage and, you know,
exactly, like language, and just to be able to say the place names, never mind anything else. But yes,
it's interesting, isn't it? Because we can tell ourselves like, oh, everyone will think I'm an idiot because I got this wrong. Whereas, like with my Turkish, I know. I mean, if I say something that is like bizarre, maybe people will laugh because it's words that they would never put together, and that has happened. Yes. But most of the time, people are just really happy that somebody from England wants to learn Turkish, because most people from England don't want to learn Turkish. So if they find one who does, then, but for me, it's like, oh, you, why did you say that? Why, that's wrong. That's in the wrong order. That's got the wrong ending. Like, I can get really stressed about it, but for other people, it's like, well, she's trying, and that's a good thing.
Exactly. And, you know, there's a story in there that actually we don't give ourselves permission to make mistakes because it's not a learning experience for us, actually. Mm. Don't give ourselves permission to make those mistakes. We shut ourselves down off the back of that, and we then don't want to try as much. So for you and I, the reluctance to speak, that kind of, I don't want to put myself out there, I don't want to speak, is a shutting ourselves down from that learning experience as well.
Yeah, and we're not robots. We haven't been programmed with all the information we need to learn, so there will be mistakes. And that's what helps you to learn.
And that's it. Ultimately, that is how we always learn. We don't learn by getting things right particularly. We learn mistakes and adjusting.
It's very true. Certainly something for me to take to heart as well. And I'm sure that people listening to this podcast will relate to that too. Mm. If people want to find out more about you, where can they do that? I'll add all your links and information to the show notes page, but if you want to tell me.
I do have a website, which is www.ramblingpsychotherapist.co.uk, and you can find me on Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn as the Rambling Psychotherapist as well.
Okay, well, thanks for your time today. You've given me a lot to think about in terms of the stories that I tell myself. Mm. And yeah, it's been good catching up with you. So thank you.
It's been great, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.